This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. KUAF is supported by the fully remodeled and expanded Walmart Museum, a family-friendly experience featuring interactive displays on the history of Walmart, Walton's Five and Dime, and the Spark Cafe Soda Fountain. Located on the square in downtown Bentonville and open daily until 9 p.m., including Sundays. 277-8493 or facebook.com/Walmart Museum for more information.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, if you've been the victim of a violent crime, you may be due more than justice. We speak with the director of the Arkansas Crime Reparations Board to find out the steps to take in order to receive monetary compensation.
And how a dream and a wooden sign were catalysts for a home to help girls learn the skills needed to become self-sufficient women.
Those stories and more. But first, advocates of access to pre-K education gained a major supporter yesterday. Democratic gubernatorial candidate Mike Ross announced his plan, if elected, to offer pre-K to every four-year-old in the state over the course of the next 10 years. Ross's proposed income-based rates would mean free access for families of three, making $60,000 a year or less. Speaking at Fair Park Early Childhood Center in Little Rock, Ross said the investment of $37 million a year will pay dividends.
Children who attend high-quality pre-K are less likely to be held back a grade, less likely to need special education or remediation, and more likely to graduate high school. They also have higher earnings as adults and are less likely to become dependent on welfare or involved with the criminal justice system.
Ross says the existing state-funded pre-K program doesn't have the capacity to serve the demand for early childhood education.
The bottom line is this: no child in Arkansas should ever be on a waiting list for pre-K. Over the last few decades, we have made great progress in expanding access to pre-K, but funding has been flatlined since 2008, and we are running the risk of getting left behind.
Efforts to increase pre-K funding by just $2 million, taken from a $125 million surplus fund, failed this fiscal session. But Ross says, as governor, he could work with the legislature to find the initial investment. GOP contender Asa Hutchinson says he also wants more funding for pre-K, but says Ross's plan does not address fiscal restraints.
Revenue numbers released yesterday show tax collections more than $43 million above forecast. John Shelnut, an economist with the Department of Finance and Administration, says key areas showed significant change compared to the previous month and same time period last year.
Results were significantly impacted by a rebound in sales and use tax compared to a year ago and versus forecast. And then primarily the components of individual income tax compared to forecast. That was the main driver, and that added $22 million.
Shelnut says collections for some taxes were up, while refund results saved the state money.
The major story occurred in individual income tax components, but we saw other good news by way of sales tax and probably a pattern story in refunds that fell in March. It doesn't necessarily say what will happen in April.
The state is now more than $78 million above forecast at this point in this fiscal year. That began in July. Total general revenue in March totaled more than $386 million.
A Lowell clinic is receiving a little help today with its operating costs. According to the City Wire, the Arkansas Children's Hospital Foundation Clinic this morning received $25,000 from Tyson Foods to help defray operating costs. Last year, the clinic provided about $500,000 in medical assistance for families in need.
The Arkansas Highway and Transportation Department is holding meetings across the state to update its bicycle and pedestrian transportation plan. The next meeting will be held at 6 tonight at the Sam's Club Community Room of Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. According to the Highway Department, the meetings are designed to gather public input to update policies and best practices into the plan, which was originally produced in 1998. The plan's update comes after Arkansas last year moved up 13 spots from last place in a survey by the League of American Bicyclists that ranked bicycle-friendly states across the country.
The Northwest Arkansas metro area has again been ranked among the top locations in the country for business. In its list of 100 leading locations for 2013, the publication Area Development ranked the Northwest Arkansas area 44th overall and 18th among mid-sized cities for setting up a new business location. The metro area also ranked 18th for economic strength factors among mid-sized cities.
The Razorback baseball team yesterday finished its two-game series at home against Nebraska with a 6-4 loss. Arkansas is now 18-11 on the season. Their five-game home stretch continues tonight, weather permitting, when they open a three-game series against the number one-ranked team in the country, South Carolina.
And the Northwest Arkansas Naturals begin their season on the road tonight. The Nats will play three games in Frisco, Texas, then three games in Midland before the team's home opener against the Frisco Rough Riders 1 week from today.
80% chance of showers and thunderstorms tonight. Lows from the lower 40s in Northwest Arkansas to mid-40s for the Arkansas River Valley. Sunshine tomorrow, highs from 58 to 63. Mostly clear tomorrow night, lows from 30 to 38. This is Ozarks at Large. Since the year 2000, the Annie E. Casey Foundation has been publishing reports regarding the well-being of the nation's children through its Kids Count documents. The 2013 edition was released earlier this week. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has more.
The title of this year's Kids Count report is Race for Results. That title perhaps belies the real focus of the report, as for the first time, the Kids Count data is organized into an index that tracks the developmental achievements of children of different races. The report not only looks at children's achievement of certain developmental milestones on a national scale, but comparisons are also drawn state by state. The data was collected across the country by state-level organizations, and Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families collected the data in the natural state. Rich Huddleston is the organization's executive director, and he says that one of the lessons immediately gleaned from the data is that, by and large, Arkansas children, and particularly Arkansas children of color, are not faring as well in regards to achieving those various developmental milestones as their peers are in other states.
Which in one respect is not a big surprise. I think the National Kids Count data book has been showing that for a long time. But I think, again, what's unique about this report is that I don't know that I would have guessed that children of color in Arkansas are doing worse than children of color in other states, but especially southern states. So I think there's some unique findings with regards to kids of color that have not been released before.
He says that while there were many examples of how Arkansas's children of color weren't faring as well as Arkansas's white children, there were a few areas that stood out in the data.
African-American kids, Latino kids, have a much lower percentage of kids who are reading proficiently by fourth grade, which is a key indicator of future educational success. Also, eighth grade math scores, same situation. Also, a percent of young adults, 25 to 29, who have completed at least an associate's degree or higher, which, of course, is a key indicator of your ability to find better-paying jobs. So there's a range of indicators that children of color in Arkansas are not doing as well as their white peers.
Much like the canary in the coal mine, Huddleston says that one telling indicator that children are less likely to meet key developmental milestones is their family's income level.
Children who grow up in lower-income families tend to score lower on a lot of these important indicators. But I think that's not the only reason, though. I think what it also shows is that if you look at just the extent to which each state is really committed to improving the well-being of color, I think it's fair to say that our institutions in Arkansas have really failed to adequately address this problem. And I think Arkansas has a long way to go to make all the investments that we need to make that would improve these indicators, especially for children of color.
As for particular areas in which Arkansas could invest to improve developmental outcomes for children, Huddleston points to education.
Arkansas has made strides in its overall education system of the last 10 years. Some parts of the education system has gotten better in terms of being smaller between children of color and their white peers, but I think the gap by any measure is still huge, and we're still not doing the things such as adequately investing in state-funded quality pre-K for really young kids, which research really shows can have a huge impact in terms of preparing kids for school, because I think the research is also pretty clear that if children start kindergarten and first grade way behind their peers, then it's much tougher to catch up.
But although the overall report may paint a bleak picture regarding the success of Arkansas's children, Huddleston says that there are a few areas where the state has been making headway in terms of helping children succeed.
You do have, in the philanthropic community, for example, you have foundations like the Winthrop Rockefeller Foundation that have made reducing poverty and improving outcomes, especially for low-income kids and kids of color, a high priority in their work. And so that's a good thing when you have major philanthropic institutions like the Winthrop Rockefeller making this a high priority. They, for example, the last couple of years have launched the Arkansas Campaign for Grade Level Reading, a major goal of which is to ensure that every child is reading proficiently at grade level by the end of the third grade. And again, because that's a key predictor of future educational success.
He also pointed that Arkansas's state-funded pre-K program, the Arkansas Better Chance Program, has seen some success, though expanding that program has been difficult as funding hasn't been increased in several years.
What that means is that, one, we're still not able to serve all of the at-risk kids who need to be served in quality pre-K programs. And that program served kids 3 and 4 years old. And so we can't serve all the kids. But even worse than that, the progress that we did make during the early part of the decade is at risk of being undermined by not putting new money into the program just to keep pace with inflation, for example. Programs are now facing tough choices about, can I continue to operate? Do I need to close my doors? Or do I need to serve fewer kids because I have less money? Or, heaven forbid, do I reduce the quality of my program because my program can't do all the things that it needs to do in order to provide high-quality care.
In addition to bolstering pre-K programs, Huddleston says the data suggests that other state-sponsored programs for older children could also be beneficial to closing the achievement gap for the state's children.
The research coming out of early grade literacy, it's pretty clear that low-income and minority kids during the summertime tend to lose a lot of what they learn during the school year. And so they have to spend several months during the next school year after the summertime to catch up on what they lost during the summertime, in part because they don't have access to high-quality after-school and summer programs. So we need to be doing more there.
Aside from just the direct impact on Arkansas's children, Huddleston says that the low achievement highlighted by the Kids Count data presents a future problem for the state.
In future years, children of color will increasingly be a greater proportion of the state's workforce. And, if you don't have a healthy and well-educated workforce, that hurts the state's ability to compete for better-paying jobs, which, of course, improves family outcomes. So this is an issue not just for the kids and for their families, but for all of us. Because if the whole state is going to succeed, then we need children of color to succeed and have the opportunities so that they can grow up and be well-educated and healthy members of the workforce, because that impacts the state's economy and that impacts incomes for everybody. So this is an issue not just for the kids, but for everybody in the state.
As such, he says it's a problem for which the state's policymakers, private sector, and philanthropic institutions should start searching. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
In about 25 minutes on Ozarks at Large, living in poverty can affect a community for generations. One organization is breaking those chains by providing education and guidance.
Essentially, that's what we're doing. We're taking the sons and the daughters of Northwest Arkansas who are impoverished, who have been impoverished for generations, and breaking the chains. And it's difficult. It takes time. Our program is 2 years long. It takes time for them to get to the point where they can stand on their own.
We visit Saving Grace, a home for girls who have aged out of foster care yet have nowhere to go. That's just ahead on Ozarks at Large.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, we'll speak with NPR's Ina Jaffe about just how many Americans are pushing back retirement because they have to work. We'll ask what that means for younger people who are trying to get into the job market. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
NPR's Here and Now can be heard this afternoon from 1 to 3 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Numbers were recently announced for the dollar amounts paid to victims of crimes in Arkansas. In February, victims of 35 cases in Washington County were paid a total of $73,811, an amount much larger than the payouts to two victims in Benton County for $2,900. The total paid out in the state of Arkansas for February of 2014 was $314,872. This sparked my interest, and to find out how the system works, I spoke with Avis Lane, director of the Arkansas Crime Reparations Board. According to recent census data, Washington County actually has a smaller population than Benton County. And Lane says the payout amounts per county are not based on population, but rather the number of claims the board receives.
When I queried statistics for 2013, I show that we received more claims from Washington County than we did from Benton County. We have two very good victim assistance programs there, and they're located in the prosecutor's office. Part of their job is to notify victims of our program and the resources available to them, and they do a very good job getting the word out. And fortunately, there just may have been fewer victims in Benton County during that time.
So are there fewer people in Benton County working, getting the word out about the programs?
Well, each prosecutor's office has a victim assistance coordinator, and they have one in Benton County, and then we also have a coordinator in the prosecutor's office in Washington County as well.
Who is eligible to receive payouts?
Anyone who has been a victim of violent crime is eligible to file an application, and as long as the eligibility criteria has been met, they are eligible for compensation.
What is some of that eligibility criteria? What does that look like?
Okay, the incident should have occurred in Arkansas on or after July 1st of 1988. That's when the program was enacted. The claim needs to be filed within a year from the date of the incident, and that can be waived for good cause. The incident needs to be reported to proper authorities within 72 hours. The victim must have suffered personal injury or death due to a criminal act. The victim must cooperate with the investigation or prosecution. The expenses must not be covered by a collateral source. The victim or claimant must not have a criminally injurious felony conviction. The victim's conduct must not be contributory or they be engaged in illegal activity, and the victim must not have been incarcerated as a result of a conviction at the time of the incident, and the motor vehicle injuries that we consider need to be DWI, intent, or hit and run.
And so then it's up to the person in the prosecutor's office who's in charge of victims assistance programs to kind of make sure that all those criteria are met, and then it gets sent to the state board?
What we ask, Christina, is for them to file the application and let our office do a thorough investigation, because sometimes the victim assistance coordinators may see something they feel might render a claim ineligible, but once it's here, it's seen differently. So we encourage them to file the claim regardless.
So are we talking about crimes? I mean, you mentioned the DWI. So if somebody is driving while intoxicated and hits somebody else.
Correct.
I mean, are we also talking about rape or, domestic violence?
Yes. Any criminal act that results in personal injury or death.
How is the amount determined?
Well, we have a maximum allowable award of $10,000, but in the event that a victim suffers a catastrophic injury, by that I mean a total and permanent disability, they could be eligible for up to $25,000.
And this is different from filing like a civil suit?
Correct.
Right. Do you find that victims just don't realize that this is an option for them?
In some of the smaller rural counties, that could be a possibility. But we put effort into making sure service providers, law enforcement agencies know about our program. We give them our brochures, our applications, and they are certainly welcome to call us for assistance. But we've saturated that information around the state.
Once a victim files the application and is perhaps approved, you know, how long does this process take?
Generally 90 days.
So that's pretty quick. That's not very long really at all. Where can people find out more information?
www.arkansasag.gov. There's information regarding our program in all of the prosecutor's offices. And most emergency rooms have copies of our brochures and applications.
And that's just because most victims, a lot of victims, go to the emergency room after a crime occurs?
That's correct.
Yeah. Who is responsible for conducting the investigations?
We have a staff of 7 investigators. Once an application is received, they conduct an investigation to determine eligibility. They then prepare a summary explaining the events surrounding the incident itself, injuries sustained are noted, and also the assistance that's requested is noted. The summary is then submitted to our board once a month along with a recommendation, and our 5-member governor-appointed board renders a decision.
Do these board members have legal training?
The General Assembly required that 2 of our 5 board members be admitted to practice law in the state, and we have 2 board members, Lewis Jones, he's an attorney from Fayetteville, and Bryce Brewer is an attorney here in Little Rock.
Do you know what your approval rate is? How many claims you approve versus deny?
I could tell you on average how many we award and how many we've denied in a 3-year period.
Okay.
On average, we've awarded over 2,000 and denied 420.
And what is the basis for denying a claim? They just don't meet that eligibility?
That's correct.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Avis. I don't believe I have any other questions.
Okay.
Okay. I appreciate your help.
Oh, you're welcome.
Avis Lane is the director of the Arkansas Crime Reparations Board. She says the dollar amounts paid to crime victims are paid for by fines and court costs imposed on those found guilty of crimes in the state. I spoke with her over the phone from her office in Little Rock yesterday. This is Ozarks at Large.
KUAF Spring On Air fundraiser begins this Friday, and we're looking to welcome more new members to KUAF than ever before. Your contribution can help us reach that goal as a challenge pledge. Your challenge pledge will encourage KUAF listeners to become new members of this station, and member contributions make up the largest portion of our operating budget. Make your challenge pledge right now and know that you're helping bring new members to this public radio station. To learn how, go to KUAF.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas. Still ahead, how ordinary citizens can help predict and watch for severe weather.
A scheduling note about today's first Thursday in Fayetteville. It will now be called for this month only second Thursday. This morning, the sponsoring organization decided to push the outdoor events associated with the event back 1 week because of the threat of severe weather. The events scheduled for tonight at the Fayetteville Underground, however, will still take place.
Saturday, you can learn how to put today's rain to good use by attending the Illinois River Watershed Partnership's Rain Barrel Workshop in Cave Springs at the IRWP's Learning Center. The workshop begins Saturday morning at 10 and goes through noon. It includes instruction on how to build a rain barrel, and all participants will take one home. Cost of the workshop is $20. You can learn more at irwp.org.
Tom Wing, director of the Drennan Scott Historic Site in Van Buren, will discuss Crawford County and Arkansas in the Mexican War Sunday afternoon at 1:30, then again Sunday afternoon at 3 at the Drennan Scott site. Because seating is limited, reservations are required. For more information, 262-2750.
And there is plenty of music this weekend. Klezmer is on tap Saturday evening in the Arkansas Union Theater on the University of Arkansas campus. The Tulsa Klezmer Band performs beginning at 5 with a reception following.
Early 20th century jazz, blues, and folk is the forte of the duo Paper Moon Shiners. The Austin, Texas-based musicians will play Saturday night at the Fayetteville Underground. You can learn more at 409-1224.
Also Saturday night, the Southern Gospel Quartet will be in concert at Mount Sequoia's Clapp Auditorium beginning at 7. The concert is a benefit for Angel Lifeline, a nonprofit program for school children in need in Northwest Arkansas.
And Sunday evening, it's the next Eureka House concert taking place with Michael Reno Harrell, a singer and storyteller from the Appalachian Mountains. Opening will be Eureka Springs' own Jerry Jones. Doors open at 5. Music scheduled to begin at 6. More information at EurekaHouseConcerts.com. Severe weather is always a possibility, no matter the season. Now, more citizen scientists are on hand monitoring conditions and relaying information to the National Weather Service's Skywarn system. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich attended a training in Ozark, and she has this story.
Ed Kalanisi is Warning Coordination Meteorologist with the National Weather Service based in Tulsa, Oklahoma. This Saturday morning, he's in Ozark, teaching several dozen Franklin County residents, a mix of emergency responders and citizen volunteers, how to spot incoming hazardous weather at this free workshop at Arkansas Tech University.
Now, supercells differ from the other storm types in that the supercells are dominated by the updraft part of the storm, and the updraft part of the supercell storm.
During a break, Fred Mullen, Franklin County Emergency Management Fire Services Coordinator, said as many as 85 have turned out for these Skywarn workshops, this being the 15th.
There's some redundant information because some of the basic science doesn't change, and we get new storm spotters coming in, so we have to cover that basic science. But there's always fresh information, too. I mean, this is the epitome of a fluid science, you know, literally a fluid science.
A surge of interest in storm spotting occurred here after a massive tornado ground across 50 miles of Franklin and nearby Johnson County in the middle of the night, May 24, 2011, killing 8 people, destroying hundreds of homes, businesses, and farms. The day after a monster twister killed 150 people in Joplin, Missouri.
Jackie, anytime you have an event that impacts a community the way the tornado did, or if we have a wildland fire that threatens homes or a flash flood that threatens lives, the responder community and the public are both going to have a heightened awareness for a time to come after that. The responder community gets really, really interested in reinforcing its training for those kinds of things. You'll see the public start being more interested in building storm shelters or doing firewise projects around their home. So, yes, it does encourage us all to be more prepared.
The community and the land remain deeply scarred by the 2011 tornado. Rick Covert, Deputy Coordinator for Franklin County Emergency Management, oversees severe weather operations and emergency communications. He says trained storm spotters can use their preferred technology to communicate hazards.
We network primarily through email. We also utilize social media. Our emergency management agency has a Facebook page, so we share a lot of that information. But we also utilize some of the old school methods, such as ham radio. We put that information on a ham radio. Many of our spotters are ham radio operators.
Conversely, county emergency teams replicate and push National Weather Service watches and warnings to colleagues in the field, Covert said.
Every day, that's something that we do. And when we see that, whether it's severe winter weather, such as ice or snow impacts, or our traditional thunderstorms and tornadoes, we're putting together a hazardous weather outlook that we share with the responder community. And so they're getting that information, they're planning their response, you know, because we do have events that take place, outdoor festivals such as Wakarusa that's coming up later on this spring.
Wakarusa Music Festival in Franklin County draws tens of thousands every summer to Mulberry Mountain, most of them campers. Last spring, a series of severe storms, one bringing a tornado warning, temporarily shut down the event. No one was hurt, but lots of tents were shredded by intense winds. so the annual outdoor festival is high on regional responders' radar.
I'm Bill Stevens. I'm the Skywarn coordinator and the assistant with a coordinator at the Emergency Operations Center.
Stevenson prefers to use a PC with a direct chat line, cell, and radio to stay in touch with spotters.
And they provide me with who they are. Therefore, I know who they are, where they are, what they are. And if I have an occasion to relocate an individual, either for safety purposes or so that we can get a better view of a particular storm, I can do that.
The National Weather Service has trained 290,000 storm spotters across the United States. And stationed meteorologists like Ed Calanese are assigned regions within which to host storm spotting workshops. Arkansas counts 5 skywarn districts across the state, and Calanese covers training in Benton, Carroll, Washington, Madison, Crawford, Franklin, and Sebastian counties.
So we try to do our training in winter to late winter and early spring, and then what we try to do is get to as many of the counties that we serve as we possibly can during that period to talk to our volunteers, to talk to the people that work with us, to talk to the people that can use our information. Some of the things we're doing new is like how I started this evening off, some of the new things that are going on in our office this year.
New technology, such as impact-based warnings and wireless emergency alerts. And once volunteers complete basic training, they can communicate what they're seeing on the ground to the National Weather Service.
So they're educated on what we're interested in having reported to us, how to report to us. Obviously, the emergency management are always going to be involved in these presentations that we do. So it's an easy way to get access to them, to see what they're doing. Maybe they want to get into their loop, their circles, and get more involved with them. So there's a lot of different opportunities and different ways to be a spotter.
And each county adopts preferred warning communications technologies.
Franklin County Emergency Management mentioned the Code Red system. That's a system that they could sign up for to receive warnings and watches. There's smartphone apps. There's smartphone radar apps. There's just the general internet. There's scanners that you can scan amateur radio frequencies. There's scanners that you can scan our NOAA weather radio frequencies and listen to our warnings and what we're broadcasting about the storms moving through the area.
Some spotter trainees are storm chasers, Calanese says, so already utilize a range of technology. And more citizens are coming forward to volunteer time to take the training in Northwest Arkansas and Western Arkansas.
Close to 1,600 so far this year in our training sessions.
At the workshops, Calanese presents a 2.5-hour-long PowerPoint on science and structure of severe weather, things like supercells, inversions, wall clouds, wedge tornadoes, mesocyclones. Volunteers learn about seasonal trends and review past storm events in their regions for context. But they also learn spotter safety, understanding how storms move and act, how to securely position themselves outdoors in the field as they monitor. Tornadoes are erratic, Calanese warns. And information spotters convey to the National Weather Service is incredibly valuable, he said.
We constantly use the information from spotters. That's why we do this. That's why we take the time. I mean, we spend a lot of time and effort visiting as many locations as we can prior to our storm season because we value the information we get from storm spotters. It's critical.
Holly Odom, a 911 dispatcher for Franklin County Sheriff's Department and an emergency management volunteer, brought her 2 young daughters with her so she could take the training.
I love coming in here, Ed speak. Every time and every year, he brings something new to the table. We see a lot more interest after a big storm in this. We see more traffic to our website, and we see more calls coming in whenever we have a disaster. Preparation is the key for families.
And Franklin County Emergency Management Coordinator Rick Covert says every county should have an array of trained storm spotters.
You know, these guys, they work a regular full-time job. And some are retired, obviously, but they're limited to what they can do, and storm spotting is not for everybody.
This Ozark Skywarn workshop was the National Weather Service's 34th training just this season in northeastern Oklahoma and northwestern Arkansas. Batten down the hatches. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more, visit skywarn.org.
This week in This American Life, Andrea's head tingles, and I mean it literally tingles, when she hears the sound of typing, the flipping of pages, or people talking like this.
This is gentle whispering.
Now then, barely touch the canvas.
I
Andrea always thought that she was the only one who felt these tingles. But was she? This week.
Listen Saturday morning at 6 to 91.3 FM.
In just a few minutes, we visit a former convent that is now a home for girls who need a little support in becoming self-sufficient women. Saving Grace celebrates 4 years with its annual Butterflies and Blooms Luncheon.
But first, a few of the other nonprofit events taking place this month. Rotary Clubs of Northwest Arkansas are hosting Everybody Wins and Polio Now, a carnival-style fundraiser, Saturday at 6 p.m. at the Pauline Whitaker Horse Arena in Fayetteville. It's a casual event. It includes games, entertainment, refreshments, and music by Ultra Suede. Tickets are available at the door or through Facebook. Just search Everybody Wins and Polio Now.
The Sunshine School and Development Center presents the Sunshine Gala. It's April 12th at the Horton Farms in Gravette. This fundraiser features casino games, live entertainment, auctions, dinner, and more. Tickets and more information available at nwasunshineschool.org.
The March for Babies at Arvest Ballpark event is Saturday. It's designed to give hope to more than 500,000 babies born too soon each year. The event is presented by March of Dimes. Registration begins Saturday morning at 9 with the 5K walk, kicking off at 10 a.m., followed by awards and lunch. marchforbabies.org/event/Northwest Arkansas for more information.
The Art Experience of 2014 is Friday, April 11th at Avondale Chapel in Bentonville. That event takes place from 7 to 11 p.m. The theme is Butterflies and Poppies, inspired by Van Gogh. This fundraising event benefits Walnut Farm Montessori School and will feature hors d'oeuvres by the main event, a live and silent auction, and music by Got It Covered. For tickets, visit walnutfarmexperience.com.
Saturday, April 19th, there's a walk to create a world free of MS at Lake Fayetteville Park. The site will open at 9 that day with 2 and 3 mile walks beginning at 10:30. Walk MS connects people living with MS and those who care about them. It's an experience unlike any other, a day to come together to celebrate the progress that has been made and to show the power of connections. If you'd like to register for the April 19th event, you can go to walkarr.nationalmssociety.org.
Just in time for spring planting, the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks will host its plant sale. That's Saturday, April 26th from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., with a special opening for members only Friday, April 25th from 5 to 8 p.m. The sale will include a wide variety of plants, mostly grown by the horticultural team there at the Botanical Gardens. We'll include plenty of colorful annuals and perennials, vegetables, herbs, container plants, and metal garden art. And this year, they will offer more succulents and butterfly nectar and host plants, in addition to a few gardening and butterfly books. For more information on the plant sale or to become a member of the Botanical Gardens, visit bgozarks.org.
And the Fayetteville Education Foundation Celebration of Excellence is Monday, April 28th from 6:30 until 8:30 p.m. at the Arkansas Air and Military Museum. The annual event bringing educators and citizens together to celebrate the announcement of the Fayetteville Public Schools Grant Awards, Fayetteville High School Scholarship Recipients, and the APPLE, that's a Patron Providing Leadership by Example Award. You can RSVP by April 23rd to Karen at FayEdFoundation.org. That's F-A-Y-E-D Foundation.org.
Becky Schaefer had a rough childhood. At the age of 12, she was placed in a children's home. When she graduated from her Christian high school, she was expected to leave the home and move on. With no better idea of a place to go, she went to college. Mostly because, as she said, she needed a place to live. She referred to that first semester as being in survival mode. She quickly got into a romantic relationship, and by Christmas of that year, she was married and expecting her first child. Becky knows firsthand the difficulties girls face when transitioning from girlhood to adulthood without the support of a parental system. She and her husband, they're still married 25 years later, moved to Northwest Arkansas from Oklahoma 5 years ago. In Oklahoma, they had once been the house parents at a children's home. Becky knew that she wanted to continue her ministry to young people in need, but was unsure of the path to take until, as she says, she received a sign from God.
So I worked at Hobby Lobby and my husband worked at John Brown University, and we were sitting having coffee before we both ran off to our different jobs, and he just said, "Sweetheart, you know, what do you want to do with your life? What do you want to do?" And I just was like, "Babe, I want to go do this thing called Saving Grace. You know that I want to do that. And I said, can't we just ask God for a sign that he would, show me that this is the way? So he kind of did that with his tongue in his cheek and was like, yes, Lord, show Becky the way, blah, 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 send her a sign. So I went to work, still a little bit heavy-hearted, and was cutting fabric for a lady.
Becky started talking with that lady and sharing her experiences and dreams. The woman told her, you have to do that. 4 hours later, she returned to the Hobby Lobby store to bring Becky a literal sign that read, Amazing Grace. And that was the start of Saving Grace, a Rogers home for girls who have aged out of foster care or who are otherwise homeless. Within 6 weeks of that meeting, the organization was formed, complete with 501c3 status, and a lease was signed on the building behind what was St. Mary's Hospital. That is now the Center for Nonprofits. The building is the former convent space for the hospital's nuns. Unable to take in everyone, though anyone can apply, there are reference checks and interviews to determine who can come to live at the house. Opening just over 4 years ago, around 10 girls have graduated from the program, and there are currently 10 more girls who call the former convent home.
For the most part, they do all their own cooking. We do have evenings where we have dinner with friends, and so a group of people that have built relationships with them and they kind of know come in and cook dinner with them. And every Thursday night, we invite everybody home for dinner, just like we would at Mom and Dad's. So that's kind of how we have it set up.
This is so much more than a home. It's a program that acts as stand-in parents, teaching the girls the way of adult life, with skills such as budgeting, paying rent, buying a car, being responsible at work and in school, skills many of these girls would be forced to learn on their own or not at all. On average, 290 young adults age out of foster care each year in the state of Arkansas, often without the skills and resources they need to sustain themselves for the long term. The program is generally 2 years, but some stay in for three. Graduates are welcome to come back for classes that are held in the convent's former chapel. Thanks to a grant from the Walmart Family Foundation, the chapel has been converted into a classroom complete with computers.
If you were in here last night, we cleaned everything up last night, but for the last 8 weeks, we've been doing kind of an art therapy project with them called Soul Restoration. There were tables covered in plastic and paint and glitter and all kinds of stuff. Then they'll start on their financial piece again. So that's this room, the classroom.
Rounding a corner to the right is the residence hallway, where each girl has her own room, complete with a key to that room. Three of the 14 rooms are currently empty, and these doors are wide open. Becky steps into one of them. Inside, there's a twin bed, a rocking chair, and a dresser. It's decorated in grays, blues, and greens, complete with a decorative owl pillow.
All the rooms are set up in such a way that everybody has their own living space. So there's only one girl to a bedroom. They have their own key to the door. There's a sink. We have four bathrooms, though, for 14 rooms. So do the math. So they brush their teeth, wash their face, and all that stuff in their own bedrooms.
Residents must pay rent, 20% of their income. At just past 9:30 in the morning, the hallway is quiet. Everyone is either at work or at school. Two are still in high school, others are getting their GED, attending community college or a vocational school, such as cosmetology or school to become a nursing assistant. Those that have chosen education receive an incentive. Their rent is paid by the organization as it sees education as one of the biggest ways to break the cycle of poverty.
Essentially, that's what we're doing. We're taking the sons and the daughters of Northwest Arkansas who are impoverished, who have been impoverished for generations, and breaking the chains. And it's difficult. It takes time. Our program is 2 years long. It takes time for them to get to the point where they can stand on their own.
The girls are not allowed to be on food stamps or other government assistance while in the program.
The cool thing when they finish our program, even if they've had the education incentive and we've waived their rent, all the rent every month goes into what we call a little escrow account for them. And so when they leave, they get a large portion of that money back. So our program is two, sometimes in some cases it's 3 years long, just depending on the wounds of their childhood. If they have been here for two and a half years or whatever, all that money, even if they've been in the education incentive the whole time, that money still goes into an escrow account and they'll get up to about $2,000.
But they also pay their first month's rent and utility deposits when they move out, just like many parents do for their own kids. Across the hallway from this first bedroom is a locked door. Behind it, my sister's closet, a boutique-like room filled with donations from vendors or members of the community. Girls can earn sister bucks for things like showing up on time, doing their homework, or being a good sister. The program teaches hard work for rewards so that when they're out on their own, they don't expect handouts. The boutique has age-appropriate clothes, those for 17 to 25-year-olds. I see labels like Forever 21, Abercrombie & Fitch, and American Eagle. Though when they first arrive here, Saving Grace will buy them necessities like underwear and socks if they come with none. Taking another right turn will bring you to the living room, furnished in part with donations from Coca-Cola International. It's homey and cozy. The place is picked up and clean.
When you're simply looking for food and shelter, that's safe shelter, you can't think past anything else. You can't dream. You can't have goals. It's like impossible. Your brain doesn't allow you to do that. And so when that, in those first few weeks, they're very much in survival mode, and they either want to hide out in their rooms and just kind of sleep all the time, or they leave, they run all the time. They're constantly on the go. And both of those are hard to deal with. And it's when they first come, it just takes a few weeks for them to kind of get in the swing of things and know that our expectations are real and they're set. And we're not going to change the standards.
Becky says one of the harder things for the girls to adjust to is having someone check in on them and asking just how things are going.
But our focus is really, very literally, the girl that's in front of us. And so we focus on being the one to that one girl. Because if we invest in her long enough, the ripple effect of her success goes out into not just her family for generations, but this community for generations, and that's so important to us.
Girls that graduate will have a mentor for life and always have the opportunity to return to Saving Grace for continuing education or advice. Their logo is a butterfly. There's that story of a caterpillar. If it's forced out of its cocoon before it's ready, the butterfly will be crippled for life.
And so many times, these girls have been violated in such a way that they have been ripped out of the cocoons of their childhood and thrust into adulthood, sometimes at elementary ages. And so we're continually here doing kind of triage to help get those wounds healed and get them where they need to be successful as adults.
Though it is a Christian organization, residents are not required to be a Christian or to attend church, though they must be involved with a civic organization of some sort. 100% of Saving Grace's income comes from private community support, 1/3 of its annual budget coming from the event Butterflies and Blooms. This year's luncheon is set for Thursday, April 17th at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers. The speaker is Mary DeMuth, who wrote a memoir entitled Thin Places. It traces the winding path of thin places in her life. Thanks to generous corporate support, the community is invited to attend the luncheon as Saving Grace's guests, but they are asked to RSVP.
Year before last, we had 440 guests at our luncheon. Last year, we had 840. This year, we are already over 1,000.
To RSVP to Butterflies and Blooms, call the organization at 479-631-1133. For more information on Saving Grace or to apply to the program, visit savinggracenwa.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
It is Thursday, April 3rd, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da.
Adams Family?
Yes. It's been a weird week. I need to go home and get some rest. The Adams Family's coming to Fort Smith.
That's great.
That's very exciting. It is a new musical comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the Adams Family singing and dancing, and the pictures are ridiculously awesome.
And so Lurch and
Morticia and Gomez. The premise is that Wednesday, the little girl,
mm-hmm.
falls in love with a well-to-do boy from a respectable family.
Which will raise suspicion.
This is all bad.
Right.
Bad, bad, bad,
right.
bad, bad. She tells her dad and tells him not to tell her mom.
Mm-hmm.
And then tension builds until they host a family dinner to introduce her boyfriend and his family.
I see.
I talked to the actress who is playing Morticia, who has this beautiful, deep, kind of Nina Simone voice.
Ooh.
And she's blonde and 8 feet tall, and you just don't expect it to come out of her. It's going to be so much fun. It's one night only, and it is 7:30 on Saturday at the Arkansas Best Performing Arts Center in Fort Smith. It's part of the season of entertainment at UAFS, and tickets start at $52. Or, while we're also looking for wacky things to do, this weekend is a gangster murder mystery weekend.
Where is this?
At the Bridgeford House Bed and Breakfast and the Crescent Cottage Inn in Eureka Springs. It is not cheap. It's like $400
for
the weekend.
This includes room and
board
and,
breakfast.
And murder.
And murder. So you can call 800-223-3246 to find out more.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown, features editor of Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night from 10 till midnight. That's Eddie Lockjaw Davis in the background. I'll feature some of his music this Friday on the show. We'll also hear from Charlie Hayden and Sonny Rollins, David Sanchez, the Yellow Jackets, and much more. That's the Friday edition of Shades of Jazz, beginning at 10 p.m.
The University of Arkansas Fort Smith's 33rd season of entertainment presents the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Jazz Band and Jazz Cats, April 8th at 7:30 p.m. in the Fort Smith Convention Center. This band and vocal ensemble will combine to perform vintage to contemporary high-energy jazz. Tickets and more information at uafs.edu.
KUAF Night with the Naturals is April 24th at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. Ticket holders with KUAF will be seated together as the Nats host the Springfield Cardinals at 7:05 that night. KUAF tickets are only available at 927-4063. You can also click the banner at KUAF.com to email in an order. A portion of ticket sales will benefit your public radio station, KUAF 91.3 FM. Guess what this is, KUAF 91.3 FM? Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Sonora.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
We'll both be back tomorrow, joined by Antoinette Grajeda.
All hands on deck for the fundraiser.
Right.
Absolutely.
Spring On Air fundraiser begins tomorrow at 6 a.m., I believe.
I'll be there then, too.
You will.
Here then.
All right.
You won't be able to get rid of me tomorrow.
Good luck. All right. Well, we will end today's show with Stoney LaRue. He is playing this evening at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville. Stoney is a Texas-born country singer who has released 4 studio and 1 live albums. He now calls Stillwater, Oklahoma home. This is his song, Look at Me Fly. For tickets to his show this evening, visit georgesmajesticlounge.com. Thank you so much for listening, and have a good Thursday.
Well, how was I to know that the dust in my soul was there for a reason? When the reason won't show, it could be rust, it might be gold. It's out of my hands, on with the show, prize it all.